Okay, without further ado, I'm going to bring in our next guest, who is no stranger here. He was guest hosting for a little bit earlier, Mr. Nate.
Good morning. Kelly.
Yeah, good morning. We had you on a few hours ago. You were guest hosting with your wife, Kristen. And, you know, I met you once. I don't know if you remember. We sat down and had some dinner together at the Clay Clark tour at the
Rewind. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
in Grand Rapids. You know, they had that buffet dinner for us the night before it started in August of 21. You know, I caught COVID at that event. and yes, that was the first time. That was the first
time. Glad to see you made it.
That was the, yeah, I'm alive. You know, I caught it. I had it twice. But the first time was at that Clay Clark event in Grand Rapids, and I wasn't the only one. There were several people that got sick at that event. I don't think I'm not blaming Clay. I think there were people that infiltrated it purposely because, honestly, you know, they were trying to make us look bad. Because remember, whenever we gathered together, they tried to say, oh, look, this is a super spreader event. Right. But I personally believe that there were plants there that caused it because after that happened, and it was around that same time, that several different events, things started popping up. And Dr. Janet Levitin, who we had on earlier, and she's here every year. She's great. She said to me that year, she's like, you're like the fifth or sixth person that's reached out to me in the last week. And they're all people like at around your level, like leaders in medical freedom that all told me they came down sick at the exact same week. And not just people that were at Clay Clark. It was like all around the country. They all came down with it and they hadn't had it up until that point. So it was just a little bit of too much of a coincidence. I don't really believe in coincidences anymore the way I used to. So I'm sure you don't either. why don't you tell everyone, you've already been on earlier. So I want you to tell people though, who might not have been watching earlier, and believe it or not, there's probably more people tuning in now because people are actually starting to wake up in the Eastern time zone. It's early on a Sunday morning where people get up and get ready for church and have their morning coffee. So you actually probably have more of a viewership than you did at 2 o'clock in the morning. So why don't you tell people a little bit about who you are, your position there? I see your qualifications there, although I know it, locally they try to defame you and say you don't have qualifications. But if you want to talk about that, I'm not going to make you talk about that, of course. You talk about what you want to talk about. But I you know, am interested in what's happened to you locally. And I think it would be good for people to know about that. But you just take the floor and say whatever you want to say.
So I am Nate Kelly. I am now in a part of my life where I have been nominated to be the county health director for Ottawa County, Michigan. This came after I was observed giving a speech with the American Frontline Coalition about how we are supposed to properly respond to the pandemic, what should have been done, where we should have gone, how we could have actually. You can never stop this. Once it was out, once the cat was out of the bag, it was going to spread no matter what. The idea was to actually slow it down, as they did say, but then get people prepared for what was about to happen. So instead of locking down and panicking everybody, there should have been like a targeted effort. We should have, you do seclude seniors. You would have your most vulnerable people secluded. So you would have your senior centers. You would gather all your seniors together. You would change the airflow dynamics within that building that they reside in. You would do blood draws to see what their vitamin and nutrient levels are. You'd give them up north. We do lack vitamin D and a few other things. So you would change their vitamins. You would change diets. You would try to put them on a better diet. As we know, people with diabetes, people who had high subcutaneous fat, unfortunately, the obese died quite a bit. The elderly, the very infirm. You would try to sequester those people. You would have nurses working in those areas who stayed on for long amounts of time. You'd bring the nurses together and be like, hey, we're going to need you to stay within this hospital system for probably a month, and then we'll transition you out. Then after you have your elderly care taken care of, then you move to the hospital system. Your hospital system should have had a intake area that was completely separated from the actual regular hospital itself. You set up a tent, its own tent. You change the airflow dynamics in that tent, and then you put the nurses and doctors into PAPRs, or powered air purifying respirators. It's like you see in the movies whenever they have like the full spacesuit helmet on that supplies air to them. Because we at the time were not exactly sure the lethality of COVID. So you prepare for the worst. At the time they were using a lot of mechanical ventilators, which we know was an absolute horrible idea now, but those ventilators also have exhaust, and that exhaust should have been captured instead of just allowed to freely enter the air. And then once you have your hospital system set up, you move on to schools, every other building, you let everybody know, hey, here's what you're going to change. Here's what should happen. Here's what we need to change. Then you keep things open and you keep things rolling. You want the population to, everybody still has to maintain community immunity. So when COVID came, we all locked down. We all went into our house and we secluded and we stayed with our family, and we lost our community immunity. Community immunity being the immunity that we generate with our day-to-day exposures to people. So as I'm exposed to my neighbor, as I'm exposed to people at work, we are all exchanging pathogens during the day. Our immune system is constantly going after those, building up different immunities. So we lost all that. That's why a lot of people got immediately sick once they came out of lockdown, right? You see children go back to school. They started catching massive amounts of RSV. You had scarlet fever. You have TB. There's a lot of other diseases that are making a resurgence that we had built, or we were building community immunity to. There was a whole lot that could have been done that was not done. And we ran it off of fear. And then we did not tell anybody to protect themselves. We did not tell them to change their diets. We did not tell them to get outside, get fresh air, be in the sun, be active, change your lifestyle, go out and be amazing. We took the time to be, we got worse. We locked down gyms. It's now known. Everybody knew if you're physically fit, you stood a better chance, right? And you have.
And what did they do being locked down at home? I mean, one of the things they did was eat worse, junk food, drinking more alcohol. I mean, you saw all those, you know, drug use even increased. I mean, when people are locked in, that's not a normal way for human beings to live. And it just actually resulted in a lot of, like you said, a lot of poor health outcomes.
Well, the people who were able to be locked in or had a career or jobs that allowed them to be locked in got locked in. Those of us, unfortunately, people like to bring up the poor, and they say that, hey, we need to protect the poor. We need to do more for the poor. We should do all this. Those people were still out. Those people never stopped working. They were still in factories. They were still putting things together. Your DoorDash drivers, your people working at the grocery store, your people working at Lowe's and Menards.
Amazon drivers, yeah.
Right. All those people kept on working. And they were unfortunately in a situation where if they got sick, most of them probably didn't say anything. They just went to work and they kept going and they struggled.
Otherwise, they weren't going to make a living.
Right. So those people were impacted the most.
Right. I mean, it's, and these people that claim to be the champions of the disadvantaged, of the people who are in that demographic, many of whom are minorities and stuff, they were doing more to harm them. And that's always been the way on that particular side of the political aisle, though we don't really talk politics here, but that just generally, not that, listen, neither side is really doing what they need to be doing for the American public. Neither of the main two parties are really doing anything close to what they need to be doing to rescue this country, and certainly not during the lockdown. I mean, you had everybody likes to talk about how evil these governors like Newsom and Kathy Hochul and everyone were, but they forget that Trump pushed Operation Warp Speed on us and oversaw lockdown and had Anthony Fauci working for him. So you try to forget that because people just like to, you know, worship him. But my point is it happens on both sides of the political aisle. The only reason I bring up politics at all is I guess you have sort of a political appointment now. You're the Ottawa County Commissioner of Public Health. Health Director is what it's called. And that was in an appointed position?
It was. So okay. Whenever the new commissioners came in, the old board, so you, whenever there's a disagreement in the county or the health department falls under the commissioners. So whenever lockdowns and everything else first get masking and everything else that followed, there are committee meetings. So every Tuesday, there's a committee meeting. And then once a month, you can go talk to the entire board. So people went to go talk to the board. They asked the board, hey, here's what's going on. We brought scientists. We brought local experts in to go plead our case. Hey, keep our schools open. We don't want to wear masks. We don't want to be forced vaccinated, these kinds of things. And the board told every single one of the people who were actually there and replaced some of the old board members were all went and asked for change, said, hey, please don't do this to us. And those former board members told them, well, if you want some change, you go ahead and run and make change. So in February, we made change. We replaced about 9 seats. And now those people who ran on change are changing things. And the other side of the aisle, it has become political. It's unfortunate that it's as political as it is, especially in the health department.
Data, this is what I don't understand, Nate. Data is data. Science is science. So what are these people saying to defend their position when you show them the science? Is it just, again, CDC talking points? Is that all they can come back with? Like when you show them studies and saying, look, this doesn't work. I've been in this field for X amount of years. This is how we're trained. Actually, as your wife always says, this is how the government trained us. Okay. The government that now says we're wrong and we're conspiracy theorists or whatever. Actually, this was their protocol for decades. Okay. And now they're suddenly saying something different. So I'm referring to OSHA, but other agencies as well. Okay. What do they say when you show them the studies, when you show them the protocol and say, this isn't the proper protocol? Do they just say, well, the CDC says we should? Is that the only answer they can give? I mean,
a lot of people did. You got to remember though, there were studies coming out, brand new studies put out with very, very shaky data, but the data would be able to be skewed somewhat. The p-value would be skewed and it would go towards the result that people were looking for. So you had mass studies were coming out, and people who don't, not everybody knows how to read a study. They don't know the difference between a study. They don't know the difference between an article. They don't know the difference between an opinion piece. Yeah. Right. So they'll go to the conclusion and see what the conclusion is, and they won't read the rest of the paper. And the rest of the paper will tell you exactly how the study was conducted, when it was done, where it was done, how it was done, what doctors were involved. So a lot of times you have to go and see what actual, who conducted the study. Then you go see who they work for.
Yeah.
what conflicts of interest they have. So masking, there was huge conflicts of interest. There was also very poorly run studies that were not, they should have never been accepted. But journals were accepting all these, and it was helping push.
And if you had put out a study like that, of that quality, would they have ever accepted it?
No, it would sit on a preprint server. It would have never been accepted. So,
and actually, let me go a step further. If you or people like you or a group of scientists had put out a study of much better quality, even that reached a different conclusion against what the conclusion they were trying to push, it still wouldn't have been accepted. So it's not even about the quality. They weren't accepting these studies, obviously, based on the quality, because they were very poorly conducted, as you said. They were accepting these studies because it provided the conclusion they wanted it to provide.
Correct. Everything during COVID in that sphere was a money grab. People were getting paid. Yeah. These studies cost a lot of money. It costs a lot of money to run a study. It costs a few $1 million to run some of these studies. Nobody's going to pay for a study that is going to give you the result you do not want. So,
right. And people don't realize that. I think that needs to be, I mean, I know obviously you've spoken out about this more so even, you know, your wife has spoken about this for a long time. about these studies and about the corruption that's behind them and what's really driving the bus, or, you know, the tail wagging the dog, whatever you want to call it, whatever analogy you want to use. But this needs to be made more well-known. This news needs to be spread very far and wide that, you know, look who is actually funding these studies. Look at the millions of dollars that is spent, and obviously the motivation behind this. We can't trust these studies. And this needs to be shown even in a court of law. I think all too often what happens, you know, I'm an attorney. And so what happens all too often is you have a case against the government, for instance, and government will come in with their own studies, their CDC studies, whatever it is, their, you know, NIH, whatever it is, they'll throw things down on the table and say, look, we have these studies, this is evidence, and it'll be accepted as evidence. And they don't look beyond it and say, well, they don't drill into data. They don't, you know, the court, you know, this is a failing of the justice system, in my opinion, doesn't drill into the data, doesn't drill into the motivations of the study, the things you're talking about, doesn't sort of second guess the agencies that are accepting these studies as valid, doesn't look at the source. They just like, these studies are here. These studies have been given the blessing of these public health agencies, or the endorsements of these public health authorities, and therefore we must accept them as gospel, without looking at really all the things you're talking about, which are extremely relevant and should be relevant in a court of law. But I think the problem is, once you do that, Nate, is then you upset the apple cart and the house of cards would fall down. Our system of government would not function properly. And this is what I think, this is why I think, you know, judges sometimes are reluctant to go that extra step of looking into that kind of corruption. Because if that were exposed, and if they ruled in favor of the position that you just laid out, the house of cards really would fall apart. Our system of government depends on our governmental agencies being trustworthy, that we can believe in them and we can trust them. As soon as you take that trust away, and as soon as you start getting court rulings saying, no, you can't trust the CDC or the FDA, then right. What do we have to go by?
Well, we saw, obviously, on our Supreme Court, we had activist judges. You had Justice Sotomayor, who believed that everybody should be forced vaccinated and everybody needed to wear a mask. And she gave her personal opinion of why these things should be done. They were not, none of that was based in fact. That was based on how she personally felt. It was not, here's the cost-benefit analysis of receiving this mRNA vaccine. Here's how many people have a negative effect. Here's how many people have a positive effect. Here's how long it lasts. Here's how long it doesn't last. Does it have negative efficacy? I'm sure these people don't have the time to deep dive into this. They're not going to go become a virologist. That's why it's so important. So Aaron Seary, have you heard of him?
Yes.
So Aaron Seary is an absolute beast. He is an attorney, but he is almost, that dude is almost a vaccine expert. He has put so much time into learning his trade and his craft, and to interpret data, to know what virologists know, to know what vaccinologists know.
Well, you have to. You're supposed to, though. We learned that in law school, that if you're going to be I remember in torts, first year law school, if you're going to be an effective tort lawyer, you better know all about the science. If you're questioning someone on the stand about a drug, about a patent, about a particular product, very technical sometimes, some of these very technical specifications, you better become accustomed with that. Because how in the world are you going to cross-examine an expert witness if you don't know what the heck you're talking about? If you don't have a working knowledge of those things, how can you really cross-examine someone on the stand? So lawyers actually do have to become subject matter experts. And this is the problem. People don't realize that, but you can't be an effective lawyer if you don't study up on the subject matter. And Aaron has done that. I agree with you. You see his, his famous deposition of Stanley Plotkin, of course, that made him famous. Yeah. That was years ago. Before, he's been doing this a long time before COVID, as I have, as Don has. I mean, my business partner, Don, has, over two decades of experience doing this. And you really have to have an intimate knowledge of this stuff. But yes, of course, the judges are not going to become virologists. But that's the whole point. And that's why too often, Nate, the governors and the public health authority, well, particularly the governors who are issuing these orders, really get a free pass, because the courts look at a governor issuing an order, an executive order that's based on a CDC guidance or directive. And they're going to say, the governor is not a doctor or a scientist. Isn't he or she entitled to rely on the guidance of the public health authorities? Is that really unreasonable that a governor would do what the CDC is saying he should do? How are we possibly going to hold the governor responsible for that? How are we going to say the governor did something bad or somehow is liable if he was just relying on the public health authorities? And so that's the problem. We have to get to those authorities and prove that they don't have our best interests at heart, and that they have been spewing false propaganda and deliberately lying to people. But again, then once you do that, the problem is, like I said about the House of Cards falling apart, now we have a system of government where we don't trust our governmental agencies. We can't trust the authorities. Now everybody has to be an authority unto themselves. So where do we really go from there? No, the what we need is reform in those authorities. It's not that you have no authority. It's not that you have no one issuing guidance. Maybe there still should be agencies that issue some guidance, because, right, every single person can't just be running around making up their own opinion. Now, doctors should be able to consult and give their own opinions in private to their patients about their particular bodies and what's best for them, because everybody's body is different. There's no one size fits all. I agree with that. But as far as like general guidelines about medicine and stuff, all right, I can see the value in that, even though I know there's a lot of people that advocate we shouldn't even have any of those agencies. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, we keep the agencies, but how about we reform them? How about we gut them? Drain the swamp like Trump was supposed to do, right? How about we clean them all out and get people like you, and like, you know, you talk about Dr. Peter McCullough and other people like that, Dr. Pierre Corey, who you spoke to earlier. Get people like that running the agencies, okay? And then maybe we could trust them again.
Right. Well, that would be, and that's what we all want, right? The reality of that is that's not what we're going to see. People are placed in these positions. They're appointed as well. The CDC director, the NIH yep. director. They're all, it's buddy system, friend system, like minds. Money is behind a lot of this. There's a revolving door at the CDC and the NIH and all these other areas with Pfizer and Moderna and these vaccine companies and everything else like that. So you have a nonstop little group of individuals that run a revolving door that seem like they have so much power because there's so much money behind all of this. And when your friend is telling you, hey, I like your product, I like you as a person, and I would imagine you have our best interest at heart, and I'm just going to go on that. And they give FDA approval. Most people were like, yes, we need FDA approval on all of this stuff. Every single drug you ever hear about has been FDA approved. That has been recalled. I can't think of a drug that has not been FDA approved that hasn't been recalled publicly. Look at what we have with Ozempic right now. Ozempic yep. was a great thing. Everybody's seeing it on TV. Everybody's using it for weight loss, off target weight loss. Now what's happening? People are having paralyzed stomachs. There's massive amounts being felt through this, and that is going to be inevitably recalled. And then one day there's going to be a documentary on CNBC about how Ozempic injured people. It's the same thing we saw with thalidomide. All these things are put through. They have shaky data, but they're put through on the backwards handshake and given approval. Money is made. People are successful. They move on. Unfortunately, there is people left in the dust. And that's just how these things go. You would like to see moral people in positions of power, but unfortunately, those people, like they say, what is it? Good people stay out of politics, because it's vicious. It is absolutely vicious to be in this realm.
Good people bad sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? If we don't ever have good people, if we don't ever have people like you standing up for truth and justice, then what kind of world are we leaving for our children and our right. grandchildren? I mean, that's what we have to look. I know you're a parent. I'm a parent. Okay. You know, I can't look myself in the mirror every day knowing that I had the ability to do something to stop at least some of this, and I didn't do anything. I mean, how can you live with yourself at that point if you don't do anything and you know what you know and you have the knowledge and the ability to help people and to open people's eyes? You have to do it. You know, I talk about this stuff all the time about vaccines because of my son's, you know, personal vaccine injury. And I'm not a doctor or scientist. I don't have the qualifications you do. But still, I have enough knowledge. I can point people in the right direction to say, go talk to this person, go look on this website, go read this article or this study. You know, I can do that at least. And then let them make their own decision, which is more than they're going to get in their doctor's office. You know, most of these doctors, now there are good doctors like the ones I just mentioned, but most of these doctors aren't going to do that. They're not going to say, hey, here's the competing evidence and different studies, and this is what the CDC says, but listen, this is what, you know, this other doctor or scientist said, or group of scientists say, and, you know, read this paper and make your own decision, or here's what I think, and have an independent judgment, independent and apart from the FDA and the CDC. No, they don't believe in independent judgment anymore. They just go, you know, by it's the authority of the person or the authority of the agency, not the authority of the evidence. And I've said that for years, that that's what we need to change. That's the paradigm shift that needs to happen. It cannot be the authority of the person or the agency. It must be the authority of the evidence. Whatever the evidence is saying, what we should do, that's what we need to go with, not what someone, you know, has propagandized or, you know, these people at the tops of these agencies that are appointed, who are placed there, as you said, for specific reasons to do the bidding of the globalists and other people in our own government that are pulling the strings. They're just mouthpieces. They're just propaganda machines. They're not actually there to protect public health. And I think that's what's scary to people. And I was having this conversation earlier tonight with one of my guests. I can't even remember who it was, because at this hour I get kind of foggy and bleary eyed, but I was having, that's a public health advice. It is not good to stay up for like 36 hours straight or whatever without sleeping.
No.
you should not do that. However, it's only once a year. It's not like I do this every weekend or anything, but what I was saying is, I was having that conversation with someone, is like, you know, I talk to people like my parents or people of my parents' generation, and they don't want to believe it. They don't want to, well, I would hate to believe, I don't want to believe that. I would hate to believe that they're that evil. The government is that evil and is trying to harm us. But they just don't want to believe it. It's not that they're saying it can't be true necessarily. It's very interesting the way they word it. I don't want to believe that. It's not that I don't believe it. There's two very different sentences. I used to be, I was an English major and an English teacher. I taught high school English for years before I became a lawyer. So how you say things, just taking one word out or something, can be very, very telling and very important. So just saying, I don't want to believe it, or I don't believe it, are two very different statements. They don't tell me they don't believe it. They say,
have you ever read the book, The Fourth Turning?
I have not.
Oh man, it is excellent. It really covers a lot of things. But to go back,
I've heard about it, but I haven't actually read it myself.
So it talks a lot about how the world changes and how generational changes happen. And it goes back, and if we think just about, I'm 40 now, so my parents in their 60s, their parents before them, 80s, 90s, right? They lived quite a bit differently. They had different moral, ethical standards at whenever they were growing up. We had the generation who were warfighters, right? We had the Vietnam War. Those people who fought those wars and lived during that time had a different set of morals. They came back to the United States and they started making the United States great. You had people who really wanted to work. They wanted to work hard. They took pride in what they did. So you had people working within government systems, private bodies, who took pride in what they were doing. They were building something amazing, and they were putting out a product that they actually believed in.
Right.
Fast forward to where we are now, people are going to work to get a paycheck. No, I'm not going to say nobody, but a lot of people don't take pride in what they do. They just go to work, they do what they got to do, and they leave. You have this throughout any industry. You have doctors. You have doctors that are just going to go to work, do what they got to do, see their patients for, you know, I have 10 minutes with this patient, then I'm moving on to the next person. They're not taking time to drill down. So we have we're living through a different moral and ethical time. And we have people, our society is very, what can I do in the next 36 seconds? What can I see? What's brand new? What's the newest best thing? It's never, let's perfect what we have. and then move forward. It's always like, what can we do now? What can we do next?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've got to unfortunately stop you there because we do have our next guest waiting to come in. But this has been a great conversation. You know, I haven't spent, I wasn't quite sure what to expect because I haven't spent enough time talking to you other than that one time. Like I said, we sat down to dinner once very briefly while other people started speaking. So we didn't really have a lot of time to talk. But I have, you know, followed your story through Kristen, and she had you on her podcast one time, and I did watch that episode. So I'm very happy for the work that you're doing. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your service, because you are a veteran too. You know, you didn't mention that today, but you are, you and Kristen both. So thank you for that. We have great respect for veterans here, and we stand up for veterans' rights here as well. That's another thing we take on at We the Patriots USA. Just a laundry list of things that we have to defend. But that's one of them too, that's very, very important and near and dear to our hearts. So thank you for what you do, and come back on anytime. Come back on Taryn's show too. You've already been on Kristen's show. Why don't you come on Taryn's show sometime? We can connect you. Kristen can connect you. Obviously she's in contact with Taryn, and have you come on that her show, you know, because it's always it's always good to get a different perspective. You know, Kristen already knows so much about you, so that's a different kind of interview than okay. than Taryn, who's going to come at it with a little bit of a different lens. But so I think that would be an interesting interview, actually. And there's so much constantly happening. There's always new things to talk about. So, yeah. So thank you. And thank you for helping us guest host earlier. thank you for stepping up. We very much appreciate that. And I will talk to you again soon. Okay.
Spectacular. We'll see you.
All right. Take care.